The serve, sliced, backhand return. Rafa with a backhand volley, and it's over. Game, set, and match. His third U.S. Open Men's Singles Championship.
Sloan from deep beyond the baseline plays a backhand. Keys a forehand. Sloan just hammering away. Now steps into a forehand. It hangs over. Forehand netted by Keys, and Sloan Stephens is the 2017 U.S. Open champion. A warm hug at the net between the two friends.
Here comes a big smile with Sloan. She can't believe it.
Welcome to Courtside, the official podcast of the U.S. Open. I'm Steve Flink, and my extraordinary guest today reshaped the way the game was played in many ways with her style of play and her uncompromising aggression from the backcourt. Monica Seles was a left-hander with two-handed strokes off both sides, clear in her intentions to control points with both power and purpose, indefatigable as a competitor. And not only did she get almost unimaginable depth on her shots, but she also opened up the court with acute angles and did that with astonishing regularity. Monica Seles was one of a kind. Monica, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm very excited.
So, Monica, how do you feel, I mean, about the anniversary, thinking about it now? You know, the tournament is having a 50th anniversary, and it's become such an enormously significant event in the world of sports and the city of New York, all of American sports. How do you feel about that?
Well, I always love playing in New York at the Open. I mean, in the New York crowds are nowhere else to be seen, heard. That excitement, that energy. I mean, the U.S. Open was ahead of its time with the equal prize money for both men and women. So for me, as a former female player, that was a huge step forward for them. And personally, I just always love playing in the city. I mean, once Mayor Dinkins made that decision, that no planes can fly over, it was definitely a lot better, more comfortable for us players. But under all circumstances, I love playing there. Some of my favorite matches are from the Open, like when I played Jennifer Capriati.
Yep, we're going to get to that.
So, anyway, so I just have some wonderful memories, really.
So, Monica, before we launch into your U.S. Open career, because there's a lot to talk about there, briefly describe. I always thought you were remarkably mature, especially by the time you were 15, the way you leaped into the forefront of the game in 89 and got to six in the world. And then the next year at 16, you secured your first major at Roland Garros with that win over Steffi Graf. Looking back, what do you think are the chief reasons why you had such big success and you were so mature at 15 and at 16? Was it the guidance of your father? Was it Nick Bollettieri, a combination of both? What enabled you to establish that presence?
I think in my generation, that was kind of like much more accepted and of you. So you definitely had that pressure, those expectations. And I think it's a combination of all the factors that you mentioned, Steve. I mean, I was always a personality that was, you know, pretty organized, with that being school and tennis, I think, and just certain values my parents installed. And obviously being around Nick, who is probably one of the hardest working people I ever met. So I always had a great structure around me, but with a huge support system and huge love, which I always say wasn't based on fear, which I try to, when I mentor some of the younger players, I try to really convey that it has, that drive has to come within you, essentially, and the support team is so important. But in tennis, it's really individual for most of us, at least in my career. And essentially, you really just gotta love what you do. And for me, it was very simple. I love to hit that yellow ball, and I gave it all, every single point, every single game. Would I be playing at my house? Would I be playing in a way back junior tournament? Would I be playing the U.S. Open finals? And knowing that in my career I gave it my all, it's just a really wonderful feeling.
So, Monica, and I think, by the way, that your view would be shared by the many people who admired watching you perform for so long. So, but Monica, that first Open of '89, it was a tough experience because you were 15. You're playing Chrissy Everett, who's 34, and playing her last U.S. Open, and the crowd obviously was overwhelmingly on her side, and she sort of turned the clock back in many ways that day. It was sort of the last great match she ever played at a major. What was it like to be on the other side of the net that day, confronting Chrissy in that state of mind with a crowd so fervently behind her?
I think even for me as a young 15-year-old, I had mixed emotions because I grew up watching Chrissy and Martina, really, and they were two of the players that I so much looked up to, totally opposite styles, personalities, but I could never pick between the two. So coming into that match, I think Chrissy and I had split, give or take, and I knew this was her last tournament. I didn't want to be known as the person that beat the amazing Chrissy in her last tournament. And at the same time, I wanted to win that match too, but unfortunately Chrissy just came out playing great tennis. I didn't play as well, and it was just a great learning experience. I mean, those are the matches when you lose that you kind of remember, and they make you tougher. And now when I talk to Chrissy, you know, we go back to some of the matches, and that's one of them. And for me, she just showed tremendous grace, both when I beat her that year and when I lost her. So in that sense, I learned a lot how she handled both of the wins and losses against me. And for me, you know, after when Zina beat her, it was kind of like bittersweet, because somewhere deep down, I really wanted her to win that US Open. But, you know, as we all professionals know, very few fairy tales in our sport happen. And I will always remember fondly that match.
So, Monica, you kind of gradually got your bearings at the Open, but it was really in 91 that was the breakthrough year for you in New York. By then, you'd already won a couple of times in Roland Garros, and you had made your mark at the majors. Talk about, you alluded to it earlier, but let's start with the epic against Jennifer in the semifinals. Yeah. A 15-year-old against a 17-year-old, and it goes down to a final set tiebreaker, and Jennifer serves for the match a couple of times. She's 2 points away from winning. She's just spilling her guts on the court, as were you. And it was one of the great women's matches I've ever seen at the U.S. Open. Talk about it now, looking back on it so many years later, why you were able to pull that match out in the end.
I think definitely. I mean, for sure, I would say if you'd ask me personally, Jennifer is probably one of those players that could just, the matches she and I play kind of get both the best out of each other. I mean, some I won, some she won, and that one really, looking back, it was based on 1 or 2 points either one of us could have won it. It was a toss essentially. I mean, I just remember coming into the match, we played some amazing matches in San Diego where I think Jennifer beat me in a tough three-setter. So coming into it, we just had all this drama built up and things like that. And we're both so young at that stage. I mean, gosh, looking back as, you know, an older person now, I mean, I cannot believe how both of us handled the pressure of that match, the expectations, and really the level that we played. I think that was the first time that two kids, essentially, or two teenagers, two tennis players, how you want to phrase it, just hit the ball hard of both sides, really, because we pounded that ball so hard back to back, and every point required 100% of our focus. We could, because we knew 1 or 2 points could decide the match, so there was no let up going on there. The intensity was so high. The crowds definitely and totally understandably were for Jennifer. I mean, she was from New York, so that made it even, you know, more, the electricity was more exciting. And I'm not sure for me, besides my family, anybody else was rooting for me, but looking back.
But there was a lot of respect for Monica. I think that crowd really respected you, your grit and your determination. And in some ways, I thought that although they were cheering more loudly for Jennifer, that there was a silent minority on your side.
Yes, I would say that's nice to put it. But I think we kind of set the bar for the younger generation who watched that match, who says, hey, if we want to beat Jennifer and Monica, this is the level of tennis we got to play. And for me personally, kind of now when I look back at my career, it's probably one of my all-time favorite matches. were both physically and mentally, every ball, that intensity was just really to the extreme. And I mean, I can't speak for Jennifer, but in my case, I was definitely so exhausted, and I still don't know how the next day, I had to come back.
Yeah, exactly. You had to come back, and not just against anybody. You had to play Martina Navratilova in the final. Totally different kind of match. Serve and volley, or fellow, another left-hander. How did you make that adjustment emotionally and technically to turn it around after the epic semi with Jennifer and find a way to defeat Martina?
Well, I think it helped that, you know, I was 17 for sure, and your body really just had that extreme ability to recover that is, you know, as you get older, much harder and harder, although some of the current players like Roger and Serena and Nadal are defying that age, which in my generation was very different. For me, I think it was just youth, and I think the energy of being in my first US Open finals, I just never believed I could really win the Open and Wimbledon. Those were the two tournaments. I was like, okay, French, Australian Open have better chances. So when I got to my first finals of the Open, I was like, okay, I gotta take this. And I went from playing a younger person in Jennifer, and then playing really probably, I think she was probably one of the oldest finalists at that stage of the Open, Martina. So, you know, it was a lot of extremes, and as you mentioned, the style of play was very extreme, had to make very quick adjustments. But as Martina,
how did you make the, especially on the returns, right? How did you deal with that, you know, with her coming in and pressuring you that way? And you didn't usually have to think about returning in that fashion against a serve volleyer.
No, I think with Martina, what really helped me that I always liked targets. So I kind of just said, you know, with Jen, every point was long. It was at least 10 plus point rally. With Martina, I knew it would be a lot shorter. So I just said, I have to go for my shots. It will be a match where or I'm going to win it by going for it, or I'm going to lose it. The margins will be very slim. And that was really the case. I mean, essentially, in both matches, the margins were very slim. But thankfully, you know, for me, they went my way. But, you know, it's one of those things that really, you know, truthfully could go either way, both matches.
So the key to that final was it went to a first set tiebreak with Martina, and then you won that 7-1, and then you seemed to really, that seemed to relax you, and you were hitting a lot of winners in the second set, a lot of spectacular returns. Did you feel very confident coming out of the tiebreak and feel in a way that you were destined to win at that stage?
Well, I think as I remember a little bit, Martina, just that when I had that one break, she kind of just lost a little bit of that self-confidence in her, a bit, just that wind. And I think that gave me huge, you know, confidence. Hey, I won the first set. I'm up a break. You just kind of, as a player, you sense it when that tide shifts. And I could feel that tide shift at that moment.
So what was the feeling like as you closed in on the title and eventually captured it? You know, you'd known what that was like at other majors, and you'd had great success already in Roland Garros, as you would in Australia. What did it mean to you to win that U.S. Open for the first time?
Was it like 27 years ago or how many? No. I think, you know, there's no feeling like when you win your first Grand Slam of a type. And for me, that was my first U.S. Open. So that feeling was just pure joy. I think also pure relief that, hey, I'm not just one type of a court player, that it wasn't just clay I could play. I could play now on hard courts too. And to be two players who are so different in their playing styles, to me, it just gave me confidence. And 91 was like a huge breakthrough year, being number one in the world, winning the two Grand Slams, kind of, you know, all these expectations through my junior career. And it's kind of like, I don't know, to say just something, just you kind of inwardly, you know, okay, I'm doing pretty good here. I can just take a little bit of a deeper breath. But unfortunately, as we all know in tennis, you're only as good as your last result. So very fast, I think after the Open, I had to go to Tokyo to play. So you really can't relax too much. But it's still an amazing feeling to know that, hey, I'm a U.S. Open, a French Open champion, and that stays forever, even probably as a 17-year-old.
So, Monica, did you feel, though, how would you compare the test physical, emotional, mental of winning the Open up against Australia or Roland Garros, coming late in summer in the heat and the hard courts in New York.
Yeah.
How would you assess?
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah. No, I think that one of the hardest in my generation with the Open was just that that your whole the drive is so much longer to get to the side compared to the other tournaments. As you mentioned, the heat is really brutal, especially if you. But also, there's no feeling like playing at night, like at the Open. That is a very unique experience. In my generation, the Open was really the only one that was doing the night matches, and then I think Australia started it. And that was kind of like a huge honor to be the featured night match. So I think as players, we all love to play it. Plus, you knew the start time of your matches. Way back then, as you probably also remember, Steve, the ladies' finals were kind of sandwiched in between the men's semis. So
right,
that took
right.
a lot of mental waiting for that 3-5 setter match or warming up. Well, they just... the other player won the set, we're going to fourth set, so things like that. And I think in the beginning, just the noise level, and most tennis tournaments, it's very quiet in between points. And at the Open, it's just that nonstop energy. I mean, as soon as you step on the ground, it's like, okay, let's go. And that takes a lot out of you after essentially 3 weeks, because in my case, I would always come to the Open at least 4 or 5 days before to acclimate, get used to the court surface, just that whole, balls and things like that.
So, Monica, in 92, you came back to the Open, defended it, and did so very convincingly. Didn't lose a set. Was that one of the best majors you've ever played? You beat Arantxa. I'm just wondering how you feel about that one retrospectively, since it was such a clean journey through the draw.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, 92 probably and beginning of 93 are probably some of the best tennis I played. I mean, 92, my only one was that I missed, sadly, was Wimbledon. But besides that, I probably played some amazing tennis throughout the year. And I coming into the Open, just that riding that wave of confidence with winning the 2 Grand Slams, having to skip Wimbledon, I was just wanting to prove, hey, I'm back. I can play. My foot injury is, all healed up. And being a defending champion, surprisingly, I felt really any pressure. And I think most of my matches were pretty fluid, I don't know if that would be the right word to use.
It would.
And so it was just one of those Grand Slams where you were just feeling, boy, I'm hitting the ball crisp. My serve is on, no body aches anywhere. And you're like, okay, I'm going to ride this wave however long it lasts. And in my case, thankfully, lasted the entire 2 weeks of that tournament.
So, Monica, from the start of 91 right into the Australian of 93, you were in the finals of every major you played. You won 7 out of 8 at one stage. Talk about what it took in terms of your dedication, all of these majors and winning in the U.S. Open, and what it took to take hold of the game the way you did in that stretch, which was your most successful of your career.
Well, I think for me, it was finally that pressure was a bit off, all those expectations, and I could really enjoy playing tennis. I was essentially a teenager, kind of finding my way off court too, which, yes, you are a tennis player, but essentially you're a human being too. I think that combination kind of coming together and accepting the amazing things that have come my way through all the hard work and the great team around me. And just continuing really that hard work, I think that both, my family with Nick, everybody installed in me. And really just, continuing. I always say that to younger players when they ask me for advice. I mean, I think almost the battle just starts when you get to the top, because everybody wants that position. Everybody wants to be number one, to be a U.S. Open champion. And you can't rest when you get to that stage in your life. And I think that's probably a little bit of a difference what we're seeing in current tennis compared to my generation. And I think that's why I say to the players now when they call me for advice, you got to just stay as hungry as you were when you started this climb to the top. And that's because really, in tennis, as I always say, you're just as good as your last match, or maybe let's say your last Grand Slam.
So, Monica, after that 92 Open, you didn't play again at the Open again until 95, and you suffered an unthinkable tragedy in April of 93 in Germany. But now you come back after nearly 28 months away, a very courageous comeback. You won easily in Canada, the tournament leading up to the U.S. Open, and then made the final. And that, to me, was one of the most impressive performances you ever gave in defeat, and you were somewhat unlucky to lose to Steffi Graf in that U.S. Open final. What are your memories of that contest? Because mine is that you had a tiebreaker, a set point in the tiebreak, thought you'd served an ace in that first set tiebreak, and it was called just wide, and that turned it because Steffi came back, won the tiebreak, and eventually beat you in three sets.
Yeah, that was an amazing match. I mean, for both the whole, you know, my time away and all that stuff. I wish we had Hawkeye then, just kidding. No, but I think into the Open, not playing for so long and just playing one tournament before in Toronto where I really just played, you know, out of my mind. Even for me, I did not expect to win it, my first tournament back. I remember coming into New York and just the way the city embraced me, going into restaurants and just people giving a standing ovation. It was kind of like, oh my gosh, I'm just playing tennis. You know, let me just stay focused and things like that. But when I did get to the finals to play against Steffi, I mean, it was just one of the expectations were so high. That was the match that everybody wanted to see. And unfortunately, this time I came out on the losing end of it in a very tough match. And then when after the match, the clouds opened up, I was like, oh, relief. I think probably she would say the same thing if you asked her, because I'm sure there's a lot of pressure for her too coming into that match. And I just knew I made the right decision in my own mind about coming back to tennis at whatever level, wherever tennis and life is going to take me. But I returned to something that I love to do. Obviously, I would have loved to have won the Open. What a fairy tale that would have been, but it wasn't meant to be. And I was just happy to return to that stage at that level.
Then you did get the Australian at the start of the year. You won your ninth and last major at the Australian Open the start of the next year and came back to the U.S. Open and lost again to Steffi in the final, not as close as the year before. What was the key to that 96 final that you lost to Steffi?
I think that was Steffi played a lot better than I did, and I probably didn't rise up to that occasion as well. I think a few extra pounds on me really did not help with my movement. I think Steffi moved me a lot more, if I remember, side to side with her slice backhand and backhand up and back, I guess, a bit. And, you know, I could just slowly, little injuries started creeping up on my body and things like that. And I could just sense, I think, somewhere along that Open that a younger generation was just right behind me. I think I just played Serena somewhere along the way. And then losing to Steffi in the finals, just you could feel a little bit of a shift. And unfortunately, that inner feeling was right.
So, Monica, thereafter, you lost a lot of – you were in the quarterfinals – most of 5 year last six Opens. You were very consistent. How proud were you? Because as you said, you were at a different place in your life, but you had this enduring consistency that was reflected in all those Opens and constantly being in the quarters in the latter stages of your career.
Yeah, I mean, I always got deep there, but I could never kind of break through. And I think once Lindsay and Serena and Venus kind of started their stronghold for me with my extra of pounds and just my movement could not keep up. The courts at Arthur Ashe became, I think, even faster than at Louis Armstrong. A few different things that just really did not help my game. And I think essentially the players just got better than I was. They played better tennis. I did not do few of the things I probably should have maybe done. And really, I lost to some great players there, some in tough matches, like when I lost to Mary, a tough match. I still remember that one. And then some, you know, to Serena, and some I probably got creamed. But as I said before, Steve, I think I could just feel the tide was shifting. My mindset, losing my dad, was probably being on tour not the same intensity. And in my game, I always needed that intensity, that 110% focus, because my style of game just really needed that. I could otherwise, it just wasn't the same level of tennis.
So, Monica, you just mentioned your style of play. And as we close this podcast out, that's what I want to talk to you about briefly. Seems to me that you really altered the face of the women's game in some fundamental ways, because no one had ever, you mentioned Jennifer, but nobody had really produced power up both sides the way you did, but not only hitting with great depth, but opening up the court with acute angles up both sides as well. That was something we really had not seen before, and in a lot of ways, I haven't seen it since. So aside from your wide range of achievements and in defining your legacy, do you believe the essence of your game and the spirit you brought to the court is what sets you apart as a player and a personality, as we, again, get back to celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Open, but you played such an important role in those years?
Yeah, I think, you know, in a way how the U.S. Open was in the, you know, as a forerunner, equal prize money, I guess in some silly, small way I was in my own sport. I think I played very unorthodox, being a left-handed, two-handed on both sides, but essentially that just started because there were no kids' rackets in my generation, and then thankfully my dad believed in, you know, giving equal treatment to my brother, to me, in terms of playing tennis, and just he nurtured my individuality of playing two hands on both sides, and I'm very thankful for that, and that's what helped me with the angles. It definitely hurt me in terms of movement, especially on my forehand side, as all the players knew, hit to Celis's forehand, she's a lot shorter of a reach and things like that. But I look back at my career, and really one of the most proud things I am of is that I gave 110% every match, every tournament, and really essentially every practice. I think if you'd ask any of my coaches, if you'd ask my dad, if you ask Nick, I mean, Nick also just led by such example how he when stepped on the court. So I try to embody that always. Same my dad. I think the different coaches I worked with, the different hitting partners, if you would ask them, they all say, you know, anytime we stepped on the court with Monica, she gave us 110%, and she expected of us also 110%. And I think that's that mutual respect, and I think the fans also felt that. And for me, there was no better feeling than to walk out on center court and know that, gosh, I'm giving it my all, and I essentially love being here, and I love playing tennis, and to be on this center stage, it is really just an amazing feeling that, unfortunately, after you retire, really nothing can replace it. Just great memories.
Well, Monica, thanks a lot for joining me. A final tack on was that Jennifer match, is that the moment above all others for you at the U.S. Open, the pulling out that great semifinal, or is there something else that stands out?
No, I would have to say that match, because I think both Jennifer, I think 14 or 15, I'm 17, we're both so young. And to play at that level with that maturity, the expectations, the pressures on us, I mean, very few people can relate to that. And the fight we put up for every point, that intensity, that maturity that we both had, I think we haven't really seen at that age since, and I'm not sure we'll see it anytime soon. So for me, it's always very, very special memories. I mean, when I came on the tour, all the players were a lot older, and it was just great to have somebody like Jennifer who, you know, you could relate to, and I hope she felt the same way, because, you know, we were kind of just navigating our own waters. There's nobody that we could call, hey, how do you do this when you're 14, 15? And most of our friends were, you know, back in school, and we were getting education on the tour. So it's very different life, but it was a, you know, I love playing tennis. So I'm very thankful.
Well, Monica, we were thankful for the spirit that you brought to the game and the spunk and all of the originality, as you said, as a left-hander, two-fisted up both sides. We'll never forget watching you play in your prime. I know I won't. So thanks so much for joining me today, Monica.
Thank you, Steve. Much appreciated, and see you soon.
All right, absolutely. You got it. Thanks for listening to Courtside, the official podcast of the U.S. Open. I'm Steve Flink. And please join us throughout August as we count down to the 2018 U.S. Open.